talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HRMP guest line, one of my favorite baseball guests. Love talking baseball with Doug Glanville, MLB analyst for ESPN, also a host of A Class Is in Session on Watch Marquee. Doug, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees. Looking at the Houston Astros, they just came off the series, of course, in the Bronx, where they took two of the four, blew a lead in both of the losses late. Could have easily been a four-game sweep there in Yankee Stadium. When you look at the Astros, would you consider them a World Series contender? As currently constructed, can this team win a World Series?
Absolutely. You know, thanks for having me, too. I mean, it's a team I had a chance to watch. I saw the game, I believe it was June 19th, against the White Sox. And I'm seeing a team that even when they don't have all their pieces and even when, you know, they're not as sharp, they still find ways to win. You're seeing sort of the smaller contributions pay big dividends. And then when you have, you know, guys like Altuve or Alvarez doing what they do at their best, you have a team that has the big bats to also go against teams like the Yankees. And look, they won that series in the terms of, you know, clearly if you went inning by inning, and that's the best team in baseball when you look at the Yankees, the way they're playing. And, you know, they went toe-to-toe. And there's no question when you watch that game, even if they had blank uniforms and you didn't know who was playing, you would see two teams that were very well matched and that at any given time, one of the teams could have exploded on and late in the game or at any time to change the complexion of that game. So, Dusty Baker is an incredibly talented manager, understands people really well, and that in and of itself is that extra push that can turn you into a champion at some point.
So, Doug, with that being said, we've sit there, and obviously it's our job to do this, but we nitpick on a daily basis, and we look at a team that is so, you know, as one of the most complete teams in baseball, but every team has holes. So then right. You start looking at, well, how and where would you improve this team? And it started out by being very concerned with shortstop, and that was put to rest very quickly by Peña. But when you look at the Astros from afar, I'm curious your perspective. If you're going to make sure and solidify this team can compete with the Yankees and do what they need to do in the postseason, where would you fortify this roster?
Well, you know, one way to look at, you know, answer that is look at the matchups. You know, okay, let's take the Yankees. Well, then you start off by how can you beat the Yankees? You know, and the reason I say that is in our conversation before the game, before the White Sox game on that Sunday, he was, at the time, Alvarez was down. And we were asking, well, what are you going to do? And Dusty was like, well, I had to think about how you can't replace that bat, but you can change your game to sort of work on where the holes begin. So he said, well, maybe I run more. Maybe I use a contact game differently. Maybe I actually approach the, you know, how I set up my bullpen differently. Like that's managing. So yes, although you can say, all right, it's always good to have another arm. You know, if you have an Odorizzi or someone goes down, it's always good to have a deep bullpen. You know, you have a short series, you know, or shorter series, and you have days off. You know, it's good to have Verlander guys who can take the ball and go eight or something like that. So they have all those weapons in their disposal, but it's the depth of those weapons that can get you through in case of an injury. But that's how you have to think of it. You have to say, how can I maneuver around my roster to adapt to those opponents? And you start, you know, it's a little early to look at matchups now, but at some point you're going to be like, who am I going to be playing? And because good managers understand that you're going to have weaknesses. And even if you try to plug all the holes, unforeseeable things can happen. So then it's a matter of how can you adapt against not only your opponent, but against your circumstances. And that's what I see as what they're doing really well. Like, okay, we're not hitting that much, but we're pitching and we're playing defense. They seem to just sort of adjust and work against their opponent's weaknesses as well. So that's where I'm most encouraged about the Houston Astros.
Doug Glanville, Major League Baseball analyst for ESPN, host of Classes in Session on Watch Marquee as well. And, Doug, you know, you get to the trade deadline, which this year's in August for the first time in forever. A lot of fans will trade for a center fielder, trade for a first baseman. And it's easy to say that, but then whenever you challenge and say, okay, would you trade Christian Javier for a rental of Trey Mancini or something like that? It's, oh, well, wait a second. Whenever you look around Major League Baseball, and this year's different, six playoff teams from each league, so you have more contenders than years before. Are there names that you're looking at right now that could be on the market that could change the perspective of an Astros, of a Yankees, and in their chances of winning a World Series?
Well, you know, look no further than, you know, who are the upcoming free agents. Now, specifically, it's hard to say, but, you know, let's take a Wilson Contreras, for example. Or, you know, like, he's someone that, you know, depending on what the Cubs are going to do, you never know. If they can't sign him or whatever goes down, then you have someone that you might say, you know, this guy could be an asset to any team. And as long as you feel like that player will match up well, look at the encouragement that any team has after watching what the Braves were do last season. The Braves lost Acuna Jr., right? So you say, oh, my goodness, your season's over, right? You lose one of the best players in the game. Instead, right away, he responded, and Alex Anthopoulos, their operations guy, and he acquired four outfielders, Doc Peterson, these cats, right? Mm-hmm. And figured out a way to respond, and all of a sudden, in August, within a couple of weeks, they were over 500 for the first time and did what they were able to do. And the Astros were part of that. And so when you see that those trades, sometimes they're pieces. They're not necessarily like, oh, I have to get, you know, Aaron Judge. I just need to complement my players. And what I like about the Astros is they don't have any, like you say, glaring holes. It's more supplemental, and it's just how you use those players. And that's a good place to be in. You know, you'd rather be in that spot than saying, well, I have five, I need to get, you know, five different pieces just to try to, you know, compete.
And, Doug, to two of the points you made, I think that when you look at the matchups between these two teams, especially with the series that was just played, and assuming these two are the favorites to meet in the AL Championship Series, you look at the fact the starting pitching was fine. But the fact that their bullpen got depleted, and at the back of their bullpen, especially when Presley has shown he now can't pitch 2 days in a row, and you only have a few veterans that you can quote-unquote trust. And then you get to that second wave, which kind of cost them that last game in New York. And you look at that. So you look at the matchups, and then you look at just kind of fortifying. I've said all along, I could see them going out to try and find a veteran or two to kind of fortify the bullpen, but also be able to supplement that back end where they've been there and done that before. Can you see something like that in the future for the Astros?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the key is, what do you have to give up? And look, Dusty Baker is all in. That's why he took the job. That's why he got there. He's all in. He's not building for next year. He's like, all right, yeah, I want to keep this particular player. The Astros have to look ahead, always beyond their manager. But Dusty's established, like, he got to the World Series last year. What are the pieces? That is exactly an opportunity to bolster a bullpen. I don't think you can ever have enough arms, especially when it's so much more based on your depth of bullpen and matchups. You know, that's why, like, let's take the San Francisco Giants. That's a team that's a nightmare to defend against, because they're built to pinch hit in the fourth or fifth inning and have 12 different matchups coming off the bench and in the bullpen. Like, that's the kind of game you got to play, especially in these postseason matchups. And one thing that Dusty said to us in our pregame was, these, you know, we knew the Astros were about to go through this stretch, right? Mets, Yankees, Yankees, Mets. Like, that's, if you want to know where you stand, that's the couple weeks you're looking. But you're taking data in now, and he's saying, okay, all right, we need to fix that, right? We need to, we can't blow out our bullpen to the point where we can't beat these guys the next day, right? That's how you have to think, and that's why it was almost like a playoff test, because you can't just think in the one moment. You have to see what choices you're making now that are going to affect you in the next ball game. And that's the data that they need to take in and apply going forward. And I see bullpen was a big one. Now, coming up, the Astros are playing, you know, they should win a lot of these games, right? Royals, A's, Royals, Angels, those, they're in the driver's seat. But they also can establish in these moments that they can win the games they're supposed to win. So that's Dusty, how he kind of looks at the season. It's opportunity, and it's a way to figure out where you stand so you can make these adjustments. And the Yankees series, the depth of bullpen is definitely something they want to bolster, but they're not far away. Sometimes it's just by someone getting healthy.
We've been talking about this stretch, nine games against the New York teams, whether it's the Mets and the Yankees, is the Gotham Gauntlet, nine in a row against them, and 4-2 so far in the first six, which, as you mentioned, a barometer of the Astros against some of the elite in Major League Baseball. It's Doug Glanville joining us on the HR&P guest line, Major League Baseball analyst for ESPN, class in session on Watch Marquee as well. Talking a lot about the micro here, and rightfully so. We're in the middle of, you know, the summer in 2022. The Astros, the best team in the American League West, one of the top two teams in the entire American League. But I wanted to ask you a macro question for a moment, Doug. It's been a topic of conversation on this station about the Astros window. And Verlander old, Altuve getting older, Bregman might be past his prime, but young players with Yordan, Tucker, Pena, young pitching staff as well. What do you think of the Astros window in the macro?
Oh, I like the window. I like the window. You know, they still have a lot of pieces, and you just mentioned it. You know, Altuve, I mean, you know, been so steady for so long, and sure, it's limited, but it's not tomorrow. You know, these guys can still compete, and the beauty of having that scenario where you have a nice mix of, you know, the Tuckers, Alvarezes of the world, is that you can always, they're already productive as young players. You know, it's like, you know, what you saw in the Cubs years ago. You have young guys of contributing their years that are doing damage now. And you have such a nice luxury because then you can just add pieces around them. You already have the productivity. It's not potential. It's production, and they're doing that. So then you bring in guys. So even if it's, you know, if you have a Verlander, obviously that makes a big difference. But you also can have other supplemental pieces for guys that are executing who are young, like the rest of their rotation. So that's, you know, I mean, when you looked at, you went back to like Urquidy and you say, well, how are these guys pitching in the postseason? Who are these guys? Well, they turned out to be, you know, really well-oiled machines when it comes to situational pitching, knowing how to, you know, execute within their skill sets. And they got all that experience early on, right? Postseason to believe. And, you know, Dusty's great at belief. So that's what I think is really good. You have young guys that are productive, but they also know what it means to be on the big stage. And that's a big reason to be optimistic about whatever happens to their aging veterans, that they can add pieces to experienced younger players that know what it takes to get to the highest point.
Doug, real quick, because we're up against it, but I got to get your thoughts on this. Reggie Jackson, now working for the Astros, came out with a quote. You obviously played against Jeter. Reggie Jackson said, I've seen Derek, I've seen Jose Altuve. Here's what I'll tell you. If you put him in Derek Jeter's spot, the Yankees have championships every year from 96 to 2004, and there's no collapse against Boston. I just want to see your thoughts.
Ouch, yeah. I didn't see that. But well, look, Jeter's one of the coldest ice water in the veins players I've ever played with, against, whatever. I mean, really, you know, intangible. And he's used to hearing, he was great, but he wasn't quite this because he didn't win an MVP. He was an under-the-radar superstar, megastar. So it's familiar. I don't think it's easy to compare, you know, different places, different markets, different times. But is Jose Altuve one of the great players? Absolutely. And he is someone that, you know, defied the biases around being, you know, not a big guy, but a guy that's just big-hearted and super talented who puts in the work. That's Jose Altuve, and you know, I think time will be kind to him. You know, you hear, I know there's always a controversy, but you know, a lot of people who are involved said, look, this guy wasn't part of this, and he wanted to live the high road. Dusty Baker spoke tremendously highly about how wonderful Altuve and how much he cares. I think that's going to be kind to Jose Altuve in time, and in the meantime, he's going to keep putting up the numbers. It certainly helps the whole world championships in his own right. But it's a high compliment to be in the same sentence as Derek Jeter as well. But now it's a high compliment to be in the same sentence as Jose Altuve, and that's to his credit.
Doug, always appreciate you joining us. Always enjoy your work. Hope to chat very soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
It's Doug Glanville, Major League Baseball analyst for ESPN, class in session on, well, at Watch Marquee. He talked about the window. He said it's wide open. Let's discuss. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
97.5. In independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Doug Glanville, always good to talk to when it comes to the baseball side of things. I wanted to ask him about the Astros window and whether it's open, closing, closed, halfway, like whatever. You're just letting the breeze in. Granato and I have been kind of going back and forth on Twitter, a few segments here and there on the bench, on the Killer Bees, about the conversation. Look, I think it's the beauty of the conversation. It's one of the reasons that I love baseball so much is because I think you have a viewpoint on one side, a viewpoint on the other. I don't even think either one necessarily is wrong. I think that, you know, my views are, you know, usually ones that I believe in. I guess we'll say it that way. But I wanted to ask Glanville what he thought about the Astros window. He covers Major League Baseball. He sees every Major League Baseball team. He does Sunday Night Baseball on the radio. He used to play for Dusty Baker. He sees this team up close and personal. Knows baseball about as good as anybody. And when I asked Glanville the question, you know, is what do you think of the window of this team? So I think it's open. He might even said wide open, I think. But he made it very clear because of the young players on this team, Yordan, Tucker, Pena, the young pitching staff, that this team's not going away. Like, this team's going to be a factor in the American League for quite a while, for a long time coming. And earlier today on the bench, Granato and Lance, they were talking about this because I think it was yesterday was Yordan Alvarez's 25th birthday.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I quote tweeted and I was like, wow, Yordan Alvarez is 25. Somebody's telling me that the Astros window is supposed to be closing. Obvious sarcasm there and, you know, being silly. And maybe even maybe that was even a petty subtweet at John Granato. I'm not above that. That could have been that way. But here was a Granato earlier on the bench responding to that tweet.
The Astros sent out happy 25th birthday to Yordan Alvarez.
Okay.
Yay.
Yeah, that's great.
That's great. Jeremy retweets it, says, wait, Yordan is only 25? I was told the Astros window was closing. Okay, Jeremy. Okay. Boy, it sure doesn't take much to sway his opinions. One 10-run inning, and they're going to the World Series, and one 25-year-old. Jeremy, did you know how old he was before?
So that was Granato. Do you think Granato's being sincere or sarcastic there about Yordan's age? Do you think he – like, I can't tell. I really can't get a read on it.
That's a tough read. I think that obviously he's pleasantly annoyed, I think, by the fact
sure.
that this conversation continues to go on. I think that, you know, at a certain point, you guys just have to square off and get this thing kind of
– We're trying to get him on.
Yeah,
but
he's running from you from what I've been told.
Well, I think it's hard to get him off the course, which I don't blame him. Look, I've said over and over again –
He's in Vegas.
Oh, is he in Vegas?
Yeah.
He's playing in the World Series of Poker. Yeah.
Is that why he sounds like he's dying?
No, I think that's probably because he probably hasn't slept either. But I think on
that's
top
what I
of
meant.
It,
yeah. He's playing, living it up in Vegas.
He's playing in the Senior World Series of Poker.
He's
and
that old.
I'm sure he's still.
Maybe Granato's window is closing.
Wait, there's a Senior World Series of Poker? Is that
yeah,
a real
Fred
thing?
Fred Bauer was no, all there, about it.
It's
too,
one
yeah.
event. It's one event.
Yeah.
It's a series event. Yeah.
What?
Like one of the earliest ones.
Kind of like the PGA Tour and the Senior PGA.
Well, no. They don't have like a full circuit. It's only like one event. It's like one event out of their 55 events. It's not the full thing.
It's still weird.
Okay. Yeah. They have like
do
one or two
senior
tournaments.
Do you lose your poker playing ability as you get older?
Yeah, I think there is endurance and fatigue that come into play.
Fred's still an Olympian.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hijack this.
No. I think there's endurance and fatigue that come into play for a multi-table tournament. Whenever you're being asked to play 14 hours against some of the world's
Fred
best
Bauer's
on the poker
an Olympian.
Table.
He has the liver and the endurance and the poker knowledge to be able to do what's necessary.
I don't think it's weird. Fair or foul, is it weird or not to have a Senior World Series of Poker event? 713-780-ESPN. And while you're at it, was Granato being sincere or sarcastic there? 713-780-3776. We are trying to have Granato, who I want to be when I grow up, on the show at some point this week, but he is doing the show from Vegas. I think he's coming back sometime soon, though. But we've talked about the window, and I think one thing where Granato keeps like getting wrong in this like back and forth that we're having, it's my opinion was not swayed with the Astros 10-run inning that they had the other day. In fact, we were doing segments that entire week leading up to that game about how the Astros is currently constructed is capable of winning a World Series. Can they add an arm to increase their chances? Yes. Can they add a bat at first base to increase their chances? Yes. Can they add a bat in center field to increase their chances? Yes. But the whole point of the conversation was that the Astros is currently built right now is capable of winning a World Series. Can they increase their chances with some moves? Yes, absolutely. And I think the Astros have went out and proved that in the last six games. You beat the best team in the NL 2 out of 3.
You had the big backup. I put it on the rundown yesterday. All the odds changed. Yes. And the Astros were the highest rated team with the best percentage chance to win the World Series.
Yeah. So, and that was one of the points that we were making too, is that the Astros, look, winning percentage wise, they have the third best record in all of baseball. Teams that have the third best record in all of baseball are capable of winning that year's World Series. You talked about the odds, and even some of the advanced numbers would say that the Astros are, you know, one of the favorites to win the World Series. And then you have some of like the sabermetric stuff that say the Astros are a high contender to win the World Series. So that was that conversation. Granato saw the 10 runs, one inning, and kind of took that and run, which is a little bit misleading. And I don't even think Granato and I are like way off about where we think of the Astros. Like, he wants the Astros to go out, win now, make a move, which I'm not entirely opposed. Like, do I want to trade Hunter Brown for like Andrew Benintendi? No, I wouldn't do that. It always comes at a price. Would I trade Christian Javier for Trey Mancini? Probably not. I don't think I would do that. So, like, it's very easy to say, give me a first baseman, give me a center fielder, give me a closer. Okay, for what, though?
Right, like, and it would be fair, you know, and obviously the Astros fans, take Jake Odorizzi for Mancini. That's not going to happen, because that doesn't interest the Orioles, who are in a consistent rebuild, but are always trying to get younger, not getting a guy on the downside. That's not going to happen. But when you look at it and you say, hey, look, as much as you want to, you know, you can scrutinize James Click. The one thing that you can say, and again, I still say the jury's out, because
I think it's fair.
I want him to do something between now and the deadline with all the money that they've saved and all the other things we've covered. But I also think that when you look at it, you now have a core, both from the pitching staff and the everyday players, that most teams don't have, that leaves that window open for an extended period of time. What Click's challenge is how do I do what the Astros have been able to do for the last 5+ years and fortify around them with the best kind of role players and secondary players and pieces that make take you from just making it to having a chance to win it all.
Right.
And that's where you've got to see where the next Michael Brantley comes from, or the next, you know, veteran added at a deadline, like a starting pitcher or whatever you might need.
It's never a complete product.
Right.
I mean, even after the Astros won the World Series in 2017, Jeff Luhnow went out and traded for Gerrit Cole. He went out and traded for Zach Greinke. And then it comes back to the big picture, because, look, I believe the Astros model, and I think they've proven this to us, they've showed us this, is that they believe in a team that's going to have long-term success, sustained high level of production. It's why they let Cole walk, because they don't believe they can sustain a high level of production for a long period of time with the contract that Cole signed. Same thing with George Springer, who's in his 30s. Same thing with Carlos Correa. They have proven their team philosophy is for a long-term sustained winner. Now, whenever you do that, do you lose a couple of years that the peak could be higher? Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think you're trading off a little bit of a peak for a wider window, and I think that the Astros are doing that. But whenever it comes to the window being open, closed, however you want to phrase that, I don't see how you can look at this roster with all the young players that they have that are critical pieces, and yes, you need to supplement the rest of the roster going forward, and say that this window is closed.
Look, because, well, like I said, how many teams wouldn't kill to have a middle of the lineup that's Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez?
Yep.
Because as building blocks or as foundational pieces, or if you look at it however a rebuild goes or a team that's trying to construct a winner, you start with, just like you start with the offensive line from a foundation standpoint in football, if you got the middle of your lineup set with those two guys, it's a whole hell of a lot easier to build around it. Same thing with pitching. You would love to have one or two young arms. That's why when you see these drafts, that when most of the high draft picks are pitchers coming all the way from high school, where you think that if one or two of these guys pan out, now I've got the starts to what could be a really good rotation. You have four pieces right there that are under team control for the foreseeable future. That mean your pitching staff is ahead of most. The middle of your lineup is ahead of most. If you want to throw Jake Myers, if he can be a guy, then you got a center fielder. So basically your outfield is almost done. And that's something that everybody would kill for as a general manager. Your shortstop's covered with Pena, so you're already good there. Now it's how do you fortify the other areas? It's a lot easier to find bullpen pieces and supplemental pieces when you have those main cogs that are locked up for the long term.
The legend, the king, the godfather of Houston sports radio, John Granato, will be joining the Killer Bees tomorrow at 1:45. You cannot miss it. All right, when we return, what's the one thing that gives you the most excitement about the Texans? It's the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What are you most excited about for the Houston Texans in 2022? There's a story on Texans Wire. I like Mark Lane's work. He does a really good job. And one of the things that he talked about here, he pulled some Greg Cosell sound, which we might hear from Greg Cosell here in a little bit. We know Greg Cosell works for NFL Films. He was a regular guest with the bench during football season, and I imagine he'll be a regular guest again this season. He does a great job. I'm a huge fan of Greg Cosell. But he was talking about Davis Mills and optimism surrounding Davis Mills. And Mark Lane's headline to this story, TexansWire.com, Davis Mills is the catalyst for optimism surrounding the Texans. One, do you think that's true? And what gives you the most excitement about the Texans? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. But for you, Blankers, as you look ahead to 2022, training camp will be here right before we know it. What is the most exciting thing for you?
I think in part it's trying to finally figure out who Davis Mills is. It's trying to see how good these draft picks can be by seeing and reaping the benefits of what I think was a very intelligent, well-orchestrated draft by Nick Caserio. And I think that's where it's going to really be the main cogs for me, because I don't expect him to win games, as you know.
Yeah.
Now it's all about seeing where you are on that kind of totem pole or food chain of the rebuild process. Have you taken that next full step? Have you gotten the guys that have shown you the signs that they are worth building around and they will be here more than a year or two? I think that they have. I think that the biggest question mark of all of those things is Mills, and you really want to see once and for all, you want him to stay healthy, and you just want to be able to make a clear evaluation. Hey, look, after a year and a half, almost 2 years, at the end of this season, I can unequivocally say this is who you are as an NFL quarterback.
713-780-3776. Like, I think that's where I'm at with Mills, too. But if you're telling me, like, what is the most exciting thing that you're looking forward to? You can't wait to hear Clay Walker, and it's football time in Houston, and, you know, all that stuff, and, you know, the big inflatable Toro and Bulls on Parade. I don't even know if they do a Bulls on Parade anymore. You can't say the buffet up in the press box at NRG. Like, what is the most exciting thing for you about the Houston Texans in 2022? Like, what's going to have your attention watching the games? What's going to, if you're one that goes to games, what is going to grab your attention when you go to those games? 713-780-3776. Like, Davis Mills to me is exciting to watch his progression. Like, I would say that. Like, I'm willing to admit that. It's not the top, like, the most focal thing that gets me excited and moves the needle for me with the Texans, but I am very intrigued about Davis Mills. Like, we talk about Davis Mills all the time because he is the starting quarterback for this city's NFL team. So we're going to talk about Davis Mills and what he could be and what he has done and all of that stuff. But in terms of, like, where this team is going, because I do think that Nick Caserio has them going in the right direction. I am pro Nick Caserio to this point on the job. I haven't loved everything that he's done. I think some of the trades he made early were trivial and minor. But if you're going to make, like, if you're going to make minor trivial deals, shouldn't you be winning them, right? Like, I get that it's not a huge red flag, but if you're not winning those trades.
I also think the urgency or the concern with it when it's sixth and seventh round picks isn't the same if you were trying to orchestrate high round draft picks.
Yeah, I mean, if you blow a six round draft pick, it's a six round draft pick. Who cares? Like, it's like dropping a penny on the floor as opposed to dropping like a $100 bill on the floor.
Right.
Like, it is a huge difference. So I like overall where Nick Caserio is taking this organization. But if you only give me one, what is the most, what's the one thing that makes me the most excited for the Houston Texans? To me, it's the growth of the rookies. Like, I want to see if Derek Stingley Jr. is starting to showcase, because he's not going to be an all-pro in year one, but is he showcasing the potential of being an all-pro? Is he the Derek Stingley from 3 years ago at LSU as opposed to the Derek Stingley last year at LSU? Does Kenyon Green look like Quentin Nelson? Does Christian Harris look like he has 120 tackles?
Harris and Petrie, to me, are the two guys that really intrigue me.
I would say, like, to me, namely on the defensive end. Like, Kenyon Green, I'm going to be focusing on Kenyon Green. I want to see if he's going to be a Quentin Nelson, how his ability to affect the run game, how much does he have of that? Like, Davis Mills, like, we're going to be watching Davis Mills very closely. What does John Metchie look like? But to me, I'll even, like, I'll even pigeonhole one side of the ball. I want to see the defensive rookies because I think that you have the making of a young foundation for what could be a really good defensive team in 3 years.
I totally agree. I think that the skill sets and kind of that football pedigree that comes with the guys that you drafted, where you drafted them, and how they could really impact this defense, I don't think you're fully going to feel that next season. I think you'll feel that, kind of to your point, you'll feel that in a couple of years. But what I want to see is the ability to plan around them, knowing they're going to be foundational pieces for the foreseeable future on the defensive side of the football. Because I think they got it right. I think they got all of those guys right. And I think that I want to be right, and I'll be looking for that because I want to see their development and knowing it's only going to get better for the defense. On the flip side, yeah, Green is a big thing to me. And you're going to be judging it a couple of different ways because if he stays healthy and does his job, that's one thing. If they fortify the run game and they finally develop a run game, which also has to go in unison with the guys that they have at running back doing their job, but we know how important a guard is to the running game, you will see improvements there as well. And then the guy that we haven't mentioned yet, but is a guy that Nick was high enough on to try and move around to get, and he's been slowed by the injury, obviously, is Mechie. Because if you get Mechie right, too, then you've got Mechie added to Collins that both are young and continue to be parts and pieces of your wide receiver room. And then whether Cook stays or you end up in search of or finding a one at some point, you're in absolutely great shape offensively, too, in terms of the weapons you're going to put around whoever's your quarterback.
To me, there's so many things to be like. This isn't just like playing Highway to Hell talk radio either. But like if you compare 2022 Houston Texans to 2021 Houston Texans, there's so much more to be excited about with where this organization is at compared to where it was a year ago. And like you and I are realistic in the idea of like, look, it might not come next year. Next year, you still might be at four wins and it looks like, you know, you're stuck in mud, right? But that's not necessarily the case if you're showing development, the young players are showing improvement. Like if you turn it back to last year, like you had Tyrod Taylor, like, No offense to Tyrod Taylor, but it's Tyrod Taylor. Like he's
offensive
somewhere
to us that you had Tyrod Taylor.
I mean, he's somewhere between the 35th, 40th best quarterback in the league. Like,
I mean, Miami game to realize, look, it's been a great story forever, and he's been a great teammate for many teams. Uh-huh. But at a certain point, you just got to draw the line and go, not the right guy, and probably past his time.
Look, and when you signed him, you might have even thought that he was going to be Deshaun's backup. Like, so, like, there's also that part of the conversation. But if Tyrod Taylor's your starting quarterback, there's really not a whole lot to be excited about. We saw the roster. Not a whole lot to be excited about. David Culley was your head coach. Not a whole lot to be excited about. Like, fast forward to 2022, and it might not even translate to wins. I don't think it's going to translate to wins.
Hope it doesn't.
Yeah, you throw in that angle, too. But Lovie Smith, to me, is more exciting as a head coach than David Culley. Davis Mills is more exciting than Tyrod Taylor, especially with what Davis Mills showed you in his last five games in that second stint as a starter, even though some people put more weight on that than I necessarily would. The running back room, you got more excitement there. Can Marlon Mack, you know, find the fountain of youth coming off injury a couple of years ago? And then you also drafted a running back in the fourth round in Damian Pierce that a lot of people are really excited about. The receiving room with John Mechie. Like, I'm excited to see John Mechie grow. And then the entire defense I'm way more excited about.
No doubt. And Jeremy, here's the thing. There is no blueprint for success for a rebuild. But when you go from the Fighting Rex Burkheads.
Don't tell that to Casario.
But from the Fighting Rex Burkheads in year one and all the different veteran one-year cheap money deals that were signed just to get you through a season, whether you're competitive or not, as you start to figure out what your true plan is and how you can get the youngest, best players in here, that was painful to watch. There was nothing exciting about that. There was nothing enticing for wanting to watch four quarters of Texans football. And the one or two times a year that they actually stayed in a game or played well, like the Chargers game, yeah, you got a little enjoyment out of it, but you didn't have that extended feeling of, hey, I'm looking forward to the next one and the next one and the next one. Now you do, because now you've gotten over that first dog days painful situation of the first year to realize there's light at the end of the tunnel. There are players worth watching. There are guys worth building around. Mm-hmm. And the most important one we don't have a jury decision on yet in Mills, but the guys you drafted all seem like they're going to be guys that are going to be able to be counted on, and they're young, and they're only going to get better, and that's worth watching.
To me, that's the calling card of the season. Mm-hmm. It's and maybe it's because of where I stand with Davis Mills as opposed to where other people stand with Davis Mills. Like, I'm not a card-carrying member of the Mills Mafia. That's not me. I think that Davis Mills could become a top 15 quarterback, potentially. But I would also argue I'm not sure that that's good enough. Let's talk about Davis Mills on the other side, too, about, you know, Greg Cosell talked about Davis Mills and said that he thinks he can be solid. But is that good enough? Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Davis Mills. We were talking earlier about that article on Texans Wire. Davis Mills, catalyst for optimism surrounding the Texans. I think there's things to be excited about for Davis Mills, at least in my opinion. It's not the most exciting thing for me in 2022, and it's not the most optimistic thing for me either. I think you feel the same, Blankers. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. But the article was written because of what Greg Cosell, who works on NFL films, he joins the bench during football season. He joined 3HL on 104.5 The Zone and was talking about the Texans and namely Davis Mills. And he had, I thought, pretty complimentary things to say about the Texans QB.
At his core, he's a pocket quarterback. And he's a very good thrower of the football. He's tall in the pocket. I think he knows what he sees. He's got enough movement that he's not a statue. You know, he lost the knee brace that he wore his last year at Stanford, and people were concerned about that, and he didn't play with that a year ago. You know, you guys probably remember the last game against Tennessee. He was very good.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an efficient player who can make all the throws, and I think he's aggressive without being reckless. So I'm looking for him to be a better player this year, and I think, believe it or not.
So that was Greg Cosell, who joins the bench. He was on there in on 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, saying that he thinks Davis Mills can be solid. Like, I think that's a fair thing to say about Davis Mills. Can Davis Mills be solid? Yeah, Davis Mills can be solid.
Yeah, if there's so many unknowns, the one thing that you can feel confident is he can be solid.
I think I would even argue that if Davis Mills is a third rounder, is solid, that was a victory, that's a win. If you can find a quarterback in the third round who is a solid NFL starter,
think about the first and second round picks that have crapped the bed.
Yeah.
And at least you got a guy that you don't feel embarrassed to have on your roster that you're only keeping there because the general manager is adamant in trying to prove that his pick was the right one, Mitch Trubisky and others. But you know what? It's not a swing and miss. It's just not what everybody expects, which is every time you look at a quarterback, you're hoping for a home run.
Yeah, no, I think that's a win with a solid NFL starting quarterback in the third round. What I would point to with Davis Mills is that solid isn't good enough in the NFL. Like, if you have Super Bowl aspirations, to win with a solid quarterback, to win at a high level, to like be contending for Super Bowls with a solid quarterback, I don't think that that's a scenario that is really all that realistic. And I point to this year's Super Bowl odds. Look at this year's futures whenever you talk about potential Super Bowl champions. The favorites to win this year's Super Bowl, the Buffalo Bills. I think that Josh Allen's more than a solid quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay, second best odds to win a Super Bowl. Tom Brady has more Super Bowls than organizations, every organization. So I would argue even Tom Brady at this advanced age in his life is more than a solid quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Look, I mean, as you look at the overall big picture, should it surprise you where the Texans are? Should it disappoint you where the Texans are? Should you be critical of what the Texans have? No, because you're being realistic with where they've come from and how far they still have to go. But it's also fair to be very, very open-minded and excited and optimistic about the fact that you might have gotten a steal. And it might not be where Brady was drafted, but it's very, very rare that you get a quarterback drafted third round or later that turns out to be a significant starter in this league. And in doing so, you still haven't defined his ceiling. So there's a chance that you could even reap more benefits than you already have. And to be fair, you've already reaped benefits that I don't think most like NFL personnel guys would have expected you to reap, other than, you know, Nick Caserio and guys that looked at him very, very, very thoroughly.
Look, Brady's probably the most egregious all-time win for a quarterback being, of course. I mean, of course he is. He was drafted in the sixth round as the greatest NFL resume of all time. 2370 texting in, 713-780-ESPN if you want to join in, 713-780-3776. He says Russ Wilson and Dak were solid third-rounders.
No doubt.
Agreed. Like, this isn't really a testament to where Davis Mills was drafted and trying to put a ceiling on Davis Mills because of where he was drafted. This is more if you look at the all-time body of work in the NFL draft. If quarterbacks taken third round and later, if Davis Mills turns into a solid NFL starter, that is a win for a quarterback you're selecting in the third round. Because for every Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott, there's like a Dave Ragone. You know what I mean? There's another quarterbacks that just don't ever amount to anything. And you even see busts and misses in the first round. But look, Buffalo, you mentioned Josh Allen, better than solid. These are just odds from Vegas of who has the best chance to win this year's Super Bowl. Josh Allen, better than solid. Tom Brady, better than solid. Kansas City's third. Pat Mahomes is better than solid. The Rams, fourth, better than solid. Like, you can go far and far down this list before you find a solid quarterback. Green Bay, Rodgers, more than solid, that's five. Chargers, six. Justin Herbert, more than solid. The first time you see a quarterback or a team with a quarterback that I would say is less than solid, at least right now, San Francisco, seventh in terms of the odds. But San Francisco also has this Kyle Shanahan system and offense. Cincinnati, let's see, San Francisco is seventh on this list. So then you have Denver, eight. They just added Russ Wilson. Yep. Dallas, nine. They have Dak. Baltimore's 10th. They have Lamar. Cincinnati, 11th with Joe Burrow.
Wow.
So 10 of the top 11 teams in the Vegas odds of winning a Super Bowl have quarterbacks I would consider that are far more than solid.
Yep.
So Davis Mills can be solid. I think that Davis Mills being solid, a solid starter in the NFL, is a success for where Davis Mills was drafted and for Davis Mills' upside. But it's not good enough.
No, it's not, because – and this is why I go back to – especially because they can't – Caserio comes from New England. And the fact that the blueprint that Caserio is basing a lot of how he's going to run the day-to-day for the Texans is based off his experiences there. They never settled for a guy that was just good, right? And they were always looking for the next guy to carry the torch on, no matter how good their quarterback was, and he happened to be the greatest of all time. So when you look at all the guys they went through, and even a Ryan Mallett, you can say, the career doesn't look good as a body of work. Mm-hmm. But when he came out, where they got him and what he was able to do in a short sample size, they looked at him and said, he's got potential, and other teams saw it too. Obviously, the Texans did. But when you look at the other guys that came along the way in and around Jimmy Garoppolo, they were never afraid to take a flyer on another quarterback or to make a business decision and bring someone in that some would view as competition for Brady, others would view as the heir apparent, but other teams would view as, hey, let's see what they got there, because if he develops and shows he's got something, I might be interested in trying to obtain him if Brady plans on making this a career for a while longer.
Yeah, I just look as solid with the way that the NFL is played now. And look, you can even go past, look at the last 10 years of Super Bowl winners. At least 7 of the last 10, I would argue 8 of the last 10, are quarterbacks that I would consider far more than solid compared to the rest of the league.
Can I push back on this idea of solid, though?
Yeah, sure.
I can't? Okay, I'll shut up. No, I think like there's a lot of quarterbacks who would probably fall under solid for the majority of their career.
But like, I like solid better than game manager.
But that's fine. That's fine. I don't have a problem with the terminology necessarily. But Stafford's the guy you said is more than solid.
Oh, sure.
No, I'll go beyond
Here's
that.
Here's where it's deeply rooted.
I'll go beyond that. But Stafford's a guy who you said is better than solid.
Oh, yeah.
I think plenty of people would have told you that was a good definition for him a year ago. I would look at Dak Prescott as a guy who many call
Never
solid.
Won a Super Bowl.
No, I know, but you don't think Dak Prescott is capable of more than solid?
No, I think, see, Dak is more than solid. I don't think Davis Mills could ever beat Dak.
I think the guys who would be defined as solid, I think a lot of them are capable of more than that.
But the guys
he
just
year.
Rattled off with one exception was better than solid.
I would tell you most of Matt Ryan's career he was solid. I know he didn't win
MVP.
A Super Bowl.
I mean, that
he
I
was
mean,
better they, than solid for most of his
I
career.
I think he was solid most of his career. He had some
he
years
won an
where
MVP.
He was,
constantly in the Pro Bowl.
That's my argument, though.
See, I think where we kind of get off track here, you and I, is what we're defining as solid. Because I look at Saul
and
somebody.
Like three solid quarterbacks in the league?
No. I mean, I just listed the Vegas odds right now, and I think seven of the top eight all have more than solid quarterbacks. Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Pat Mahomes, Matt Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow. I just rattled off more than 10.
You may have rattled off the top, I mean, the majority of the top 10 in terms of quarterback rankings
Deshaun
by
Watson.
The end of the year.
But then Kyler Murray.
But then you do the bottom 10, and it's like...
You watch that Kyler Murray slander.
I mean, Derek Carr.
Is Davis Mills going to fall in a category where only like three or four guys exist?
And what's that category that you're referring to?
Solid.
I mean, I look at solid as like middle of the road. Like, I'm looking at like 12 through 20 in terms of where they stand in stature in the NFL pecking order of best quarterbacks in that year.
I think that's a tier where those guys are most of them, not all of them. Most of them in any given year are capable of being more than that.
Okay. See, that's where, like, if I'm looking at starting quarterbacks right now in the NFL that I would say are solid in, like, the Davis Mills-esque solid, like, Kirk Cousins to me is solid. Do I think Kirk Cousins is ever going to win a Super Bowl? No, not really. Jameis Winston, I think, is solid. I mean, he's had some...
I think Jameis might be a little less than solid. I think Kirk Cousins is solid, but I think that both of them have solidified their ceilings.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. I think that the one reason, the one place where you've got to give a little more leeway is... If you know a guy is young enough and hasn't been given enough opportunities or for whatever the other reasons and tangibles that play into this, you don't know how good they could possibly be yet, then I wouldn't be quick to give them the solid moniker.
To me, you need more than solid to win, especially now in the NFL. Because like we can go down and look at the last 10 Super Bowl winners, but the game has evolved into much more than like what it used to be. This is a much more pass-happy league than it's ever been.
Let's also factor in when you say that because of the fact that if you're above solid but you're on your first contract, it means something too. Because you can be above solid, but if you're making $40 million a year, the numbers don't lie and say your chances to get to and or win a Super Bowl are greatly reduced. So the other factor in is like I'm talking about when you say the potential to still have no ceiling and to get better is one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing is what are you making and for how many more years? Because that could be a big factor too.
I think OG on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, I think he brings up a very good point. Here's what y'all aren't thinking about. A solid quarterback will always have a chance to have that one magical year, i.e. Cam Newton. Didn't win the Super Bowl, but I see where you're going with. And I would also throw in a couple of other examples to what OG's talking about. I think Joe Flacco's in that conversation. Like somebody who was a solid quarterback but had a one magical run. You could say it about Eli Manning. Eli Manning's a Hall of Fame quarterback but was around solid.
God,
I would say better than solid. And he had two magical runs. So I think but if that's what you're looking for, though, from Davis Mills, like it's not Pat Mahomes, it's not Josh Allen, you're not a contender every year. You're hoping that Davis Mills has one peak year where he's amazing, and that's the only year that you can win. And if you're banking on that, you're not a sustained winner.
No, you're not, and it's a huge mistake to try and think that, hey, that's okay, because of the fact that even if he has that year, what happens if someone else doesn't? What happens if an injury happens at a certain point, and you want to say, hey, let's do it again next year, let's run it back. But if that's the best year you may ever get out of this guy, mm-hmm. and you're trying to rebuild for the extended long-term future of this franchise, then you are being very narrow-minded if you think that you're putting all your eggs in his basket. That's not to say that you don't keep him around and you keep giving him opportunities and you keep evaluating him. But if you just decide, hey, I'm not looking at any other quarterbacks because I've seen that he can be solid, that's a massive mistake by your entire franchise.
It's not easy to acquire a Rodgers, a Mahomes, a Brady. But if you look at those careers, like almost every single year that they're at the helm at your quarterback position, you're a contender to win a Super Bowl.
Yes.
As opposed, let's use a local example. Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub for 3 years was a top five quarterback in the NFL. So for those 3 years, he was more than solid. And the rest of his career, he was solid. So really with Matt Schaub at the helm, if Davis Mills is that, and I would say that's a huge win, you're looking at you must win in those 3 years. And that is a very dangerous place to be in the
NFL.
That's
right. That's what I'm saying. Whether it's 1 year or 3 years, that small window of time means there's so much added pressure because now I've got to find an all-pro wide receiver. Now I've got to have a really good defense. Now I've got to be able to fortify this roster quickly with guys that I need. To say that window is small but it's open, but how long it's going to stay open and how fragile, like if the wind mm-hmm. blows, it could close even more, that's too risky for a team that is trying to get back to long-term success on a consistent basis.
Let's talk about this and relate past Super Bowl champions to this as well. With the Greg Cosell calling Davis Mills solid. He can be solid. We'll take your thoughts to 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.